to item number 28, open public input, and we do have some folks. Some of you have done this before, some excuse me, some haven't, but 3 minutes, and then you'll hear a buzzer go off, a beeper, and just wind up, you know, shortly thereafter. If you're an elected official, which we do have a county commissioner, the three-minute rule doesn't apply. However, that doesn't mean 3 hours, you know. though I'm sure you would have that much good stuff to say. So I'll call you up two at a time. John Johansson and Janice Schweitzer, please.
I've never done this. Where do we?
Just sit right in front and pull the mic in. And then once you start the timer and hear the buzzer.
Okay, good morning, and thank you for this opportunity. My name is John Jonasson, and I'm a fourth-generation farmer from eastern Skagit County. My family settled in the Skagit Valley in the mid-1870s. The current location I farm was purchased in 1926 by my great-grandmother. The reason I'm here today is to ask for help getting control, managing, and returning the ever-expanding Nooksack elk herd to state and federal lands. Using the DFW's own records, this herd was started in 1946 and augmented in the early 2000s. My family and many others were here long before the elk herd was established. I'm not aware of anybody when the herd was started or augmented, including my family, that gave permission to expand this elk herd on our valuable agriculture land. There are beef, dairy, crop, and grass hay farmers that have made their living working these lands. That has become almost impossible now that 700 to 800 elk roam our properties. They will leave a trail of destruction eating and trampling their way to wherever they'd like to go. Included in the packet you will be provided is the sheet titled North Cascade Elk Herd Survey Results. You'll see that there are 1,593 in the estimate recently in the elk herd count. You'll also have included a sheet that shows 418 game unit, the Nooksack game unit. You will see how little of the unit was counted to achieve these numbers. Only the areas highlighted in green apply to the survey numbers. There are many hundreds outside this count area. You will also, if you include the upcoming calf crop, the overall herd size will be approximately 2,500 head shortly. The statement has been made that now that the target has been met, the herd will be allowed to continue to grow where it should be. It's always stated to the general public that hunting seasons would be restored once the target was met. Currently, there are very few lottery type of tags and very few damage tags. Increasing these permits would help with the goal of removing the herd from the Ag Valley floor. What I would ask for you is also help returning the herds of elk to the state and federal lands and game unit 418 and provide hunting seasons on the Ag Valley floor with owner permission to help keep them in GMU 418. Most of us would love to be able to drive to the GMU 418 to observe elk on state and federal lands. It would be great to watch without fear of damages and dollar loss on my ag ground. RCW 77.04.012 states in the closing sentence, nothing in this title shall be construed to infringe on the rights of private property owners to control the owner's private property. It is titled Mandate of Department and Commission. Please understand that most of us do not hate elk. We only hate the numbers. I'm available at most times to discuss any form of resolve or relief. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Well said. Yes, Commissioner.
There again, I've got to talk to John for a minute here before the commission meeting today. I've had the opportunity to talk with Randy numerous times. And before we go any further, I think we have the right lady on the project. I'm very optimistic. But this is more to address my fellow commission members. Because you guys are, you know, they're talking about crops and this, that, and the other. But it's no different. Every one of you, when you get ready to leave your home, you lock it. And if you had the local drug meth heads breaking into your house, doing damage, stealing every day, and you called the cops and nothing got done, I think you would be a little upset too. Last summer, we had a crappy year, seeded 9 acres of oats. The weather did not cooperate. We hit into a long drought. The oats didn't amount to much. But by the time the elk got done with them, I didn't even cut them. 9 acres, not that big a deal. We were probably into them, you know, 60, 70 bucks an acre. So you just walk away. But it isn't only the crop damage. And John said he runs cows too. It's the damage that they do to your fences. I have strips of fence that I build 3 and 4 times a year. Normal years, yeah, you go around it once in the spring and you're done. But anytime you put a set of cows out, the next thing you know, here they are walking down the county road, you're going, oh, the elk have been by to see me again. And I live in a lot bigger country than what you do. Because the problem is, elk will be crossing a road, here comes a rig, instead of the elk just jumping the fence, whoosh, away it goes. And it never happens on a Tuesday when you're bored. It's always on a Saturday night or a Sunday morning when you want to go do something and, oops, got to go run the cows back in, build the fence. So I really do hope that you guys will listen empathetically to these people. They're not asking for a lot. They're hardworking people trying to make a living. So whatever we can do, we need to do what so we can help them out a little bit and give them a little relief.
Thank you. And Commissioner Wesson, please, and Janice.
Janice hasn't
talked yet. No, she's next. I just keep the rotation going. So.
Okay, I also thank you for listening to us, and I'm here to report on the success of your plan in 2000 to increase the elk herd. It was down to just a little over 300, and you've managed to get it up to about 2,000. So that part's really great. The problem with the part of the plan where there was going to be enhancement plots to keep them as envisioned, I believe, on higher ground, didn't happen. And so now these 2,000 elk are somewhere around, you know, roaming the valley floor. I am here. Can you all hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to represent Cindy Ovenel Kleinhausen, who operates the 00 Ranch in Concrete. And those guys have just about 600 acres. They run 100 pairs of beef cattle. That means mama and baby. And they have been self-sustaining since the 1940s. These guys are really responsible, hardworking. They have a record of public service. And they are one of the first conservation plans that welcomes wildlife. And their fences work for normal migrating wildlife. They don't stop elk, and they can't use fences that stop elk. Once the elk came in 2012, the self-sustaining farm that has a pasture rotation and also has 300 acres of managed timber that they can harvest in selective logging in case of a lean year, that's all down the tubes because the elk come in and eat on the pasture that the cattle are supposed to be on. And when they fertilize it and they try to replant it, the elk can't read and they don't take direction, so they sit on the repastured land. Now, in order to be self-sustaining, they're spending about $16,000 a year to buy hay. And when that comes in bales, the elk actually rip through that, and that causes molt. So I'm here to plead their case that they're not going to be self-sustaining. And they, like some other large farmers, may be out of business, which is really sad if we don't do something. I know we can do better. I know with your help that we can get a plan to get these guys to higher ground because they're now calving and they're multiplying at an exponential rate. I think I finished.
And you did very well. Yes.
Thank you.
Question, ma'am?
Excuse me, Janice.
Ma'am, one question for you. You mentioned in your testimony that the herd had grown from 200 to 2,000. When was it that the herd was at 200?
Amy could probably speak to that.
I would say probably in the early 2000s. So we reintroduced a couple of rounds of elk.
Okay, and Randy, good, please. And Commissioner Wesson.
Good morning. Thank you very much for the commission allowing us to speak. I'm Ron Wieson, Skagit County Commissioner. I've presented a couple different letters from the other two commissioners in Skagit County. This is a great concern to our East County residents and how it affects the property of those individuals. Myself, I am a dairy farmer, fourth-generation dairy farmer, so my family is still farming. I get out on the weekends. One thing with dairy farms, you have to have a farm plan. That means I've got to show how many cows I have, how much feed I'm purchasing, how the nutrients from those animals are taken care of. So my question to this group is, what is the farm plan for this herd of elk? We get 2,000 animals running around, moving into the area. They're eating feed. They're depositing waste on the ground. How is that going to contribute to the property, the individuals that are out there? The other thing is the replacement rate. With a dairy farm, you have mostly all heifers and so females, and you're replacing, so you get, you know, hopefully an 80% calf crop every year. So with this 2,000 head, say 1,000 of them are females, what's the replacement rate? Are you culling enough to keep that replacement rate the same, or are you increasing the herd size? And as you increase the herd size, they have to eat something. Are you providing food for them, or are you expecting the neighbors, the private property owners, to have the food for this increased herd? One thing that happened to us last year, we had a fence go down. We've got 700 organic dairy cows on pasture. Organic, you have to pasture them. Fence went down. A bunch of them, 100 or so, got out on Chuck on a drive. It was a state highway. And one of them got hit. So we lost the cow. We had two claims on vehicles that got smashed. Thankfully, no injuries to the humans. But we were responsible to do the insurance claims on that. So we spent about $12,000 with insurance claims on vehicle damage. Skagit County has had over two or three different sheriff's vehicles that have been totaled because of the elk damage. What is the responsibility of the property owner, the state? How are we going to deal with that? One thing, you know, with neighbors, if you have livestock getting out, you have to be a good neighbor. You need to be a good neighbor. You need to make sure you're able to control that livestock. So if my fences all come down, I have a responsibility to the neighbors causing damage. I think it's important for everybody to realize that, yes, a few elk is okay, but when you have 300 or 400 walking around on farms, when, as mentioned, they're trying to feed their livestock, they're trying to make sure the fences are good, but how much time do you expect them to spend to make sure their operation moves forward and goes as profitable? We all need to have a profitable business, and so otherwise you'll just leave the ground open. I really do, you know, thank this group moving forward. I thank Amy for coming up and being involved with our meetings. But we need to have a better process for the individual property owners and the community to be able to deal with this increased number of elk that come on their property. The damage is just getting to such a point they just cannot go on forward. So we need to have a good plan, and I really do appreciate the time and effort that all of you are being involved in the commission. I know there's a lot of different subjects you're dealing with, but how do we help the individual property owners in the Upper Skagit area? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner. And living off Chuck and a drive, I don't want to run into one of your cows either.
1,500 pound cow.
Yeah, it'll win. It'll. Well, thank you. And being a neighbor too, I look forward to as having chat with Randy often. So I'm around. I'm in the neighborhood.
All right.
In the hood. Randy, good to see you. Let's call up Bill Schmidt, please.
Good to see you.
So thanks for organizing this, by the way. You know.
Thank you. Both John and Janice and Commissioner Wieson have submitted written comments, plus myself. We put them outside there. So you should get it, hopefully. And Amy, do you receive copies of our written comments? Thank you. Chairman Brad Smith and commission members, my name is Randy Good. I'm president of the Friends of Skagit County and also vice president of the Cattlemen's Association. You are our only voice with the DFW. Our frustrations are at a tipping point in eastern Skagit County with the intrusion of elk onto our agricultural valley floor for the past 10 years. Over 600 elk counted on the Ag Valley floor on just one occasion recently. The Game Management Plan, DFWs, page 7 states, quote, as mandated by the Washington State Legislature, RCW 7704012, end quote. The last sentence of that mandate reads, quote, nothing in this title shall be construed to infringe on the right of a private property owner to control the owner's private property, end quote. The plan then states this, quote, It is this mandate that sets the overall policy and direction for managing hunted wildlife, end quote. Please advise DFW to follow the law as mandated. Elk damages to agriculture is $452,000, average of $15,000 per farm per year for larger farms, $10,000 for medium-sized farms, and $3,000 for an average farm. There's no avenue for compensation. 700 to 800 homeowners live up there. Garden damages and losses of half of those homeowners are $300,000. Again, the breakdown of these damages are in my written comments. Total losses are over $750,000. And under food security, DFW's elk management prohibits farmers from producing organic crops, including grass. Elk constantly contaminate soils, crops, and damage fences. Free-range pasturing is an organic farming requirement. With all this problems, it's impossible with elk constantly damaging and intruding through fences. Commercial crop damage compensation is capped. This does not cover seed and fertilizer costs. Land values in the county will need to be lowered, all in an infringement on our private property. Under elk hoof rot, when will DFW start considering the seriousness of spreading elk hoof rot? Amy at the Cedar Woolley meeting, April 9th, expressed concern that locating elk to state and federal lands would contaminate new wildlife areas with elk hoof rot. Where is DFW's concern now while DFW's elk contaminate new areas of our Ag Valley floor, including my farm? A solution proposed by Fenner, Scott, and Cole, dated August 16th, 2016, after some of our tours with Brad, and supported by signed organizations, is attached. Senator Pearson used this agreement to develop the proviso, which is attached to our comments. Proviso provided funding in the DFW General Fund for a specific purpose to move the elk by any means necessary off the Eastern County Ag floor to state and federal lands. This is DFW's responsibility as mandated by RCW 7704012. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, Randy. John Hestey, please, and Bill.
Good morning. My name is Bill Schmidt. I'm president of the Skagit County Farm Bureau, and I'm a landowner in Skagit County. I want to kind of paint a little picture of what's happening in Skagit County. Basically, the ag is on the valley floor, and we have two small mountains running down the sides. So what you have at the higher ground is you have a lot of Forest Service ownership, goes into some state ownership, and as you go closer to the valley, you have small non-industrial and industrial private forest ownerships, and then agricultural floor. The agricultural floor is close to Highway 20, which runs east-west through the county alongside the Skagit River. So what you have is you have a lot of elk up in the hills that are finding out there's better grass, less predators, and it's kind of a welfare state right now. The elk, they have their habitat, they have their food, water, and cover. So they're living there, and they're calving there, and they're growing there. And I've been given tours for almost 8 years, and what I beg of you guys is to give us some measurable results to handle the problem. I expect every one of you to help us save our farms. What we have is we have the elk crossing the highway, and we have accidents on the highway, so we have a public safety factor. We have fences. They're like Sherman tanks. They go through your fences. You're chasing your cows. We have liability problems. We have an airport. We have them out on our airport. So we have FAA problems. No help. The tours and everything, everybody says, oh, this is terrible. We'll do something. These aren't even normal elk anymore. It's like domestic cattle. I'll shoot one in my field, and they won't even run out of my field. They'll watch me take the elk out of the field. It's not the same as going in the woods and watching the wind and the clothing you wear and the noise you make and having a great experience. It's more now the harvest in the valley is almost like a meat hunt. So what do we do? Do we shoot some and give them to the food banks? Do we let the landowners keep them off the property? Do we bring in veterans and handicap and help? But we have to do something, because what's happening now is the population explosion is not keeping up with the harvest, and our co-managers are not helping. I'll give you two reasons why. We have data and GPS collars. The tribes will not share the information with us. The main reason is because the elk are where they're not supposed to be and not fitting the plan, and they don't want to give data to support that it's not working. The second thing is the tribes do not have a hunting season like we do. So the few companies like Puget Sound Energy and stuff that are trying to do wildlife enhancement in the higher grounds to keep the elk that are coming down in the winter up above the valley floor out of the agricultural region are being hunted and chased further down in the valley. So here we are in the valley feeding them. They changed the hunting rules so we can't shoot them like we used to. They're staying there longer, and we can't chase them back up because they're being hunted year-round on the open and unclaimed lands and pushed down in the valley. So you kind of get the idea of the problem, so let's give us some help, and let's have it measurable so people aren't so frustrated after 8 to 10 years of farm tours, and show us what we're doing to help save some family farms. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Colleen Mayer, please, and John.
Hi. First off, I'd like to apologize for looking like I just tumbled out of bed. I did. I've been sick in bed for a couple days. My credentials to speak on this topic are that I have done probably more ADA type of advocacy in the state of Washington on issues regarding right-of-way access than any other civil engineer in this area. Yeah, I've no charge, done that for many years up until the time my kids were born. I did it probably 6 hours a day on average after working 8 hours a day, and now I still do a little bit, but I don't do as much as I used to. And I'm also a master hunter. I'm one of four or five who is qualified with all, I think it's seven weapons. And up front, I'll tell you that the crossbow is the easiest weapon to qualify with in that program. By far, Ms. Noyes, who is your ADA coordinator for the department, has I don't think that she has been doing a good service to you folks who are in decision making capacity. So, and I pulled public disclosure request material and I went through there looking at it. And she is acting more as an advocate or special pleader for the people who are coming looking for ADA type of changes to rules than she is an administrator of the program. And having done as much work as I have done, there are a lot of people out there, and it's one of my hot button issues, is that they're looking to exploit the program for their own gain. And the disability regs are to get you on an even footing with everybody else. It isn't to give anybody an advantage. So there should really be no advantage to getting yourself into the program. And specifically with the scope crossbow issues, when I go through that, she presented to this commission that the manufacturers had stated that to put sights onto a scope crossbow that comes with a scope requires that it be drilled and trapped, and that would void their warranty. Well, the true story is they all come with a Weaver base on them. You can take the scope off, you can put a set of sights on, you can get a set of sights for a AR-15 that goes right on there, costs you $29 for one NC something company out of China, $20. You got iron sights on there, they're good for 60 yards easily. And there you've got a 60-yard weapon that is good for archery hunting distances. And you don't have to drill and tap anything. You can change them out in 2 minutes. And what she presented that all crossbows manufactured today would need to be drilled and tapped, when I talked to the manufacturers, they said, We have never produced a crossbow in my tenure with the company that has come with anything other than a Weaver base on it. So I don't know what the heck she's talking about. And so that was part of the rationale for you accepting that change. And it just frankly flat out BS. A scope crossbow like the one I have, there's videos.
Time.
time.
Oh, really?
The buzzer went off.
Okay.
So you can wind up your thought. But
oh, but oh, yeah.
Crossbow. I'm the scorekeeper.
Oh, okay. A crossbow like mine. You there are videos. You can shoot a 12-inch balloon at 300 yards, 65 foot-pounds of energy at 400 yards with these crossbows with a 400 grain bolt in them. I mean, it's crazy. It's really not.
Thanks, Sean. I remember that testimony about the scope well. And Director, did you want to comment on any? No. Okay. Let me just. We hear your concern, and it is being addressed.
Okay. Nate and Anise both have a lot of material I've provided to them, and with the facts, figures, and everything else on there.
We're aware of the concern. Thank you, and it is being addressed.
Thank you much for your time.
Jennifer Gould? Huh? I got it. Okay. Colleen?
Hi, I'm Colleen Mayer, and I'm a volunteer coordinator with Puget Sound Wildcare. I've been here a couple times before. And I'm also a volunteer. It's not a paid position like so many of them. Okay, so we're having the problems with our restricted permit. You guys probably don't need to be brought up on speed with that. But at this point, after 6 months, we still have had no headway on it. Most of our cages are now empty, and we don't have any information on anything changing in the near future. It's just been stalled out. I was panic on these things. Sorry. we need to have some type of a plan to stay operational. At this point, we had information from Fish and Wildlife that they would work with us, and so we did keep our interns coming. So right now we do have a couple of interns with us and more that are planning to come, but we don't have the wildlife for them to work with. We have very few, very little wildlife, and we are trying to keep up with the ones that are not here, telling them what we can offer them, which is really extended programming and educational outreach and things like that, but it doesn't really match what they are coming here for. And so we're trying to keep it up, things up with them so they can maybe find something better possible at this late date. As far as the animals that we're getting in, we're having to turn people away, not because we don't have the space, but just that we're not allowed to have the animals. We did have one intern who took a squirrel in this last week, and it was an honest mistake. You know, we didn't have any. Their cages were empty and such, but we were not allowed to have that squirrel, and so she spent the rest of the day driving the squirrel up to Arlington to Sarve, who were kind enough to help us out and take the squirrel from us. But this is just, you know, one gray squirrel. Our outreach programs are still going. We do education to summer camps and schools and scouting, chamber of commerce meetings, fairs, both public and private, and we are trying to keep that going at this time. But most of those things are free, and so we're going to be burning through our capital savings, which has been worked up to try to get us in the city of Puyallup. They want us to set up sort of a regional center there so people can come to a spot for education rather than having us come out to every meeting and such. So that portion is being lost. At this point, we don't see any resolution or any headway with Fish and Wildlife. And so as far as the complaints there, I've worked on complaints that we've received on our website, and those have been, we've been successful with those. And usually it's just a lack of communication that's gone on or some confusion. But with the state, the complaints are anonymous. There's no explanation of what they're about. And so we have no resolution. At this point, the inns are closing. It's not a matter of space at the inn for the animals. It's no inns. So.
Thank you, Colleen.
Thank you.
And Jennifer, you're the last one for this morning, or for this part.
Hi, so I'm a licensed rehabber for Puget Sound Wildcare. I've been there since 2010. We are being shut down basically by Fish and Game because of complaints, and it's I'm being forced to tell people that come to our door with animals that are injured they have to go somewhere else. It's not fair to the animals. It's not fair to the people that come to us with, you know, to have to drive somewhere else when they're already at our place. There's a hospital upstairs. We have the capabilities and resources to take care of these animals, and I have to tell them they have to go somewhere else. I don't find that it's fair.
I forgot to mention that we've turned away the officers.
Yes. Oh, yes. So we work a lot with the animal control people, and we have to tell them they can't bring animals to us as well, which forces them into a situation where they have to shoot animals on site, and, you know, that's not something they want to do necessarily. So.
And the ones wildlife are bringing us, we can no longer take.
Yeah. If we take in animals that are not on our permit, we're getting in trouble for it. Even if it's, you know, a dying animal that we're trying to, you know, help, we're still getting in trouble for it, and it's just not fair to the animals and to the people, I don't think. Yeah.
I think it helped.
Okay. Well, thank you for your passion and your concern. So.
The director.
Oh, the director, yes.
Yeah, morning, Colleen and Jennifer, I'm Joe. I'm not aware of the details on each of your permits. I do know that we want to work through the, you know, getting whatever needs to be done. We need you guys as partners. I mean, we need to figure out a way to... to keep that kind of service that you provide open and available, especially I'm aware of Colleen, where you're located, Jennifer, not so much, but okay, same. I mean, you're in a critical place for us. I would just encourage you, and I'll look into it, I'll talk to the folks in the program. I just encourage you to keep working at it so we can take care of whatever needs fixing, updating, whatever. And
okay. It's just some compliments to the staff is all it is.
Okay.
3 minutes.
Well, you said a half hour.
No, I meant we're
half. They're getting ready to come in. So, you know, we're kind of past critical.
Connect are, or you know, what we're asking you to do, and get some sense of the reasonableness. I'd be happy to talk to you. We could do that, sure.
Thank you all, Randy. Thanks again for organizing, bringing your colleagues. We hear you. With Amy's good leadership in there too, we hear you. So I look forward to coming out and seeing you guys.
Mm-hmm.
We are a little ahead of schedule, so Commissioner Mikhaizov wanted to say a couple words about getting signaled.
No, I was just going to go for the next
one. Okay, well, just a couple words here. He said 3 minutes. So.
A few things about the North of Falcon salmon seasons, but on this matter of the public testimony that we just heard, I would have to say that we had some pretty compelling testimony here from I think it was six or seven people, and it struck me that they're here today because there was no public testimony allowed yesterday when we talked about the elk hunting season. We did take public testimony in Wenatchee in March. That's a long ways away. We had some discussion about whether it's appropriate to take public testimony in April at the time of the decision, and that was pretty good testimony. And I sure would have liked to have heard that yesterday. I'm not sure if it would have made a difference in the motion that passed about what the seasons would be. But at any rate, I'll echo the chairman's request of the staff to take this public testimony into consideration. I think we do need some sort of a measurable plan that a year from now these same folks would come back and say, nice job, you've done something, as opposed to it's still not the same. When an elk herd goes from a 100-fold increase in less than 2 decades, that's pretty substantial. But moving to something I know a little bit more about than elk. Yesterday, Ron told us a little bit about the salmon seasons, and we're a little behind schedule. So just very quickly, I know that when we hear news about the salmon seasons and how hard it is to get some seasons and all the problems there are with the fish runs here, there, and everywhere, and things are declining from what they were, that it's easy to get a little bit of a negative picture from all that, and I would hope that the fishing public out there would have a little bit of a positive picture. So while you can always paint the glass as either half empty or half full, there are some positives, and so in terms of the spirit of half full, let me say that starting right off that we had a decision this year. A couple of years ago, we did not have a decision. As it lingered, fishing seasons got lost. That's very much of a positive and a success. We heard a lot about the people working together the other day. Made note that our acting director was down there. That's an important thing for the tribes. We heard about Ron Warren and the staff being up till midnight modeling things. But in the end, people were working together. The tribes were complementary of the department's activity, as were the fishermen. People working together, that's a positive thing. What about the seasons alone? On the Columbia River, there was a lot of talk early about the decline in the upriver bright run and that it's not as good as 2015, and a lot of scary stuff about declines and what that might mean for fishing. But at in 2015, when the run was about a million upriver brights, that came as a surprise. It was great news, but nobody who knows things about healthy salmon runs knows that they don't go up and down through the years. And nobody expected it to stay at a million, which was about as good as 1925. So we had 200,000 in the forecast this year. That's still four times the spawning escapement goal. So it's a healthy run of fish. That's a positive thing. The Buoy 10 fishery is going to go through August 24th, and I think it was 1996 when it was completely closed. So when I went to a Little League game the other night, and you have all those fishing experts hanging on the fence or sitting in the stands, they were happy with a Buoy 10 season that would go to August 24th. And the area above the Lewis River open until September 15th when the run size will be update. People were happy about that. So, I mean, there's a lot of good fishing there that, that is very much of a positive. In the ocean, Ilwaco, Westport, LaPush, Nia Bay are open. And the coho fishing is a little bit better than last year. Ilwaco area, the one that I know a little bit more about, is going to open in late June, which is a traditional opener in recent years. That's a positive, and it should go as long as Buoy 10 or a little bit more. So the ocean fishing is kind of open for business, and I think that's a positive. In Puget Sound, we did hear from Ron about some things that were positive. I won't go into those again, but a lot of the seasons are the same as last year. Some of them are better than last year. One of the area has a strata that is not as good as last year. But back over the winter, when we were looking at the December 1 RMP agreement closing Area 5 in the Straits, Port Angeles, North Puget Sound for a year, this is a lot better than that. Now, we did get some help from Mother Nature on the Stillaguamish forecast, but that's all positive. The winter blackmouth fishing in Puget Sound has extensive seasons. That's a positive. So I just wanted to make note that there's a lot of hard work that has gone into this. And for the fishing public that's out there that was so fearful of all these closures over the winter, there is fishing that's open this year. And we can always do better. That's always true. But there are a lot of positives.
Thank you. I had to take me a while to get my thoughts together. But all you folks that came down from Skagit County, that was excellent, compelling testimony, and I hope it was worth your time to make that drive. We hear about this. It's a little far away, so for us to hear about it right up front, very compelling. It seems so obvious to us that if you have, or to me, I can't speak for everyone, but if you have, I know there's many other factors that have to be considered, but the simple fact is it's private land. You're at risk because of a state resource, wildlife. It's your livelihood, it's your reputation, it's your everything is tied up in this, and it's a finite area. So I believe solutions can be found, and I think Amy is working towards that. But I really wanted to say thank you for spending that time coming down and really making it clear. All of you gave excellent testimony for the full commission. Thank you.
Yep. Okay.